Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behind the badge.
Okay, ready to go, Reg? All set? Yeah. No, my voice does sound a lot stronger today. Less nasal. I haven't blown my nose in a few days, so I think I have finally beaten that cold that I was talking about the last couple of weeks. So, took a while, though. But no, the instrument feels good today. I feel a vibrato, a timber, if you will. Not straining at all. So, feeling good. Feeling funky. Feeling good. Ready to go? All right, let's go. Put it down the book. Episode 336. Wow. How's that? All right, you ready to go? Did you notice that the music started right? It seemed when I saw you remember there's been a delay after I've said, you know, the opening, and then I signal for you to hit the music. Did you notice that it for whatever reason, it did seem to fire up exactly when you hit the button this time? Do you have any idea why? No, of course not. Okay. All right, let's go. I'll give you the three S's. I'll give you the intro. You give me the music. I'll give you podcast number 336. How's that? All right, here we go. Star, smile strong. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. Hold on. And it went right back to the old way. Okay, you better hit it a few minutes or seconds before then, huh? Didn't last very long. Here we go. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNradio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. Don't forget to rate or subscribe to this podcast. But most importantly, don't forget to get out there. Hit the streets. Make signs. Make banners. Get one of those things that the sandwich people twirl. It doesn't happen as much in the Midwest as it does apparently on the West Coast with those big kind of surfboard messages that people stand outside of a sandwich shop or a fast food place and twirl to get your attention. I don't see that as much here in the Midwest. It seems like it's on TV all the time, but that's always on the West Coast, so who knows? We only have 3 or 4 months of summer here anyway, so maybe it's not that much of a full-time gig. No one out there in January flipping that thing around, trying to get you to go to get a submarine sandwich. Anyway, tell your friends, tell everybody that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. It should be theirs, too. Your loyalty and devotion, much appreciated. And don't forget, go to WGNRadio.com. Go to the prompt for this podcast, and you will find tons of previous podcasts just waiting for you to listen to. I've done 335, so this is episode 336. So, not sure if you have been keeping attention, paying close attention to some of the news that, and I use that in quotes, news. I'm doing air quotes right now. But, you know, when you go online, on most desktop computers now, and I'm sure on phones as well, you know, whether it's on Facebook or Instagram or just regular, you know, Apple or Microsoft Word, there's just a portal that comes up on your screen with a bunch of stories to read and click. Yahoo News, you name it. Tons of stories out there just trying to bait you, to help you click on. Sometimes they do deliver the goods. Sometimes they are cleverly written, salacious, or as I said before, well-written headlines that pique your interest, and then the story turns out to be an old story or never really delivers on the appealing headline that they have stated. It's all about revenues and advertising and clicks and views and all that stuff. So sometimes going for your news online can be frustrating because some of it is not legitimate news. And so there was something, you know, there is something to say about when Donald Trump says fake news. Now, you know, he may have taken that definition to an extreme, but it is legitimate. There is a lot of fake news out there. There is a lot of news that is either manufactured or certainly presented in such a way to pique your interest, especially the headlines, in order for you to click on. And once you click on, you know, somebody gets a bonus. You know, hey, we got to click on that. Doesn't matter if that headline was written correctly, if it was enough to pique your interest and to entice you to hit click. Once you clicked on that story, whether the story actually delivered what it promised, those people that that wrote it or put it together really don't care. Now, that's not everything. I'm not saying there's some legitimate journalism out there still. It's harder to find, even on so-called legitimate news sources, because sadly, there is so much garbage out there put up there by anyone. I mean, that's, once again, the advantage and the disadvantage is, yes, there's access to everybody, and that access means everybody can put up anything they want, and that can be dangerous. But this whole idea of interesting headlines or headlines that are there written in such a way to pique your interest, to entice you to click on it, yeah, the legitimate media, the media that is offered, you know, online media that is offered by legitimate newspapers like the New York Times, the Chicago Tribune, or the Washington Post, or USA Today, or some of the websites by some of the all-news cable stations, you know, like CNN or MSNBC or Fox News, they have to resort to those same kind of, I guess, I don't know what you would say. I mean, once again, I'm saying pique your interest or enticing quite a bit because that's about the best way to say it. But you could also say manipulative because some of these headlines are that way. Because once again, now, sadly, we are in a world of clicks and views, and many companies rely on those numbers, be they true or false, to generate revenue through advertising. So we sadly are guinea pigs or pawns in this whole thing. And sometimes, and if you've been reading the, you know, the online news services or any kind of a news thing, you hopefully have caught on to some of the more reputable sites that do deliver real news and other ones that entice you. I mean, those ones that drive me crazy are the ones that they have some interesting headline, then you go on and then it's basically a photo gallery, and the thing that you were talking about isn't even in the first 20 photos. So I've learned that trick now, and I don't even bother anymore because the payoff was never anything interesting anyway. But once again, a well-written headline could get you. So I'm not sure if you've noticed or how much you do read these. I don't know. I mean, I've said here on this podcast, I've been reading newspapers since I was before I could read, or it seems like that. Certainly before the age of 10, from 7 or 8, I've been reading newspapers, and it was a real difficult, and 2 or 3 newspapers, by the way, a day. Which is one reason why I've, you know, grown up being such a news junkie and a pop culture, you know, kind of fan and expert, if you will, because I've been reading a lot of magazines and newspapers for the great majority of my life, and it was difficult. But about, I would say now it's at least 2, if not 3 years ago, I did, you know, cut the cord in terms of getting a hard copy subscription to a newspaper, and not getting that newspaper delivered to my house every day. That was a strange reality. That was a strange reality, not holding and reading a newspaper every day like I have been for decades. But I was just, I just felt like the price was not worth the content. The newspapers were shrinking and the prices were going up. And I found myself paging through a newspaper within 5 or 10 minutes in terms of stories and not only of interest, but their length, and paying $2 or $3 for an issue, or paying several hundred dollars for a 2 or 3 month subscription. So now I do rely solely on my news via the internet and television news. And that's how I get it. And I do miss reading a newspaper. When I see a newspaper somewhere in an airport lounge or, you know, at a health club or something, I will pick it up and read it. But no, that's a couple of $1,000 a year in subscription rates, or at least $1,000, that I feel that I'm not getting my money's worth. So you do have to, you know, when you get online, you do have to be a little more eagle-eyed and have to parse through what could be just bait-and-click stories and legitimate stories based on the sources that they come from. But as I said, even the legitimate news outlets now have to, some at times do have to get a little more clever and a little maybe more, a little more sleight of hand to compete, because that's who they're competing with. These multi-billion dollar media organizations are now competing with somebody in their basement that are making up stories or whatever. It's amazing. You know, everybody says, oh, well, this is this is evening the playing field and giving people access. I guess that's true to some extent. I don't think the public knows how to handle that access, as we've seen in social media, which I'm going to talk about here. But hey, that's the world we live in now. That's the world that a whole generation has grown up on and accepts, and so that's what it is. So it's up to it's up to the reader, the consumer of information. Now, before, the ball was in the hands of the outlet, the source, to make sure that what information they were putting out was as accurate as possible. That was where the responsibility once was held, at the news source, so that by the time it got to the public, it was vetted, it was confirmed, and to the best of the ability of the working journalists, it was facts. And so the consumer, the reader, had that trust, and so they relied on that. And so when they picked up the newspaper, they believed what the newspaper said, because the newspaper gave the impression that that was their sole mission, to put out factual information. And the public trusted that. Now, we have seen that that trust has been broken down, and certainly technology has completely shifted the paradigm of that. And now anybody with a computer can, especially who has some really good skills, can create a website and make things look official, cutting and pasting with visuals, and there's no written or unwritten rules about confirming sources, or so that's the way the news is getting out now. And it's much harder from our standpoint as readers or listeners to disseminate. It takes a little more effort on our point. We cannot just be so laissez-faire, or we cannot be so casual. It just, I saw it on the internet. Well, now you better search that internet. I just saw last week, for example, several stories popping up early in the day that Jerry Lee Lewis had died. And I'm not surprised. He was 87 years old. I just read recently that he had gotten inducted into the Country Music Hall of Fame, and he was too sick to attend the event, you know, and he was in the hospital or something, and he sent a statement. I read this story, and so when I hear this news about a week or so later that Jerry Lee Lewis had passed away, and I'd seen it on several, you know, Facebook postings, I was like, oh, well, you know, it sounded like he was sick. He's 87. It's not out of the realm of possibility. But I wasn't seeing it. When I went on to a regular news site, I wasn't seeing the information. So that raised up a red flag, a little warning sign, like, well, now is Jerry Lee Lewis really dead? So then I had to go another step. And I put into Google, I put Jerry Lee Lewis. And I didn't see stories saying Jerry Lee Lewis is dead. And I'm like, And then later in the day, on my Facebook news feed, I saw TMZ writing a retraction saying that they had gotten a bad source and that someone that purported to be in Jerry Lee Lewis's, you know, was representative or in his inner circle, had reported to them that he had died and, in fact, that he had not died. So that's my point. If I would have just read what I saw on Facebook the first time I saw it and posted it on my Facebook page or called some friends and said, "Did you hear Jerry Lee Lewis died?" There we go. That's how the bad news and the rumors get spread. So now we have to play the role of the reporter, of checking multiple sources to see if these news items are really correct. And it's making the media world a much more complex and complicated place to both live in and trust, because you just don't know what is true and what isn't. And social media especially, and I've talked about this many times, has really become like, you know, an international global water cooler and a lot of, you know, just opinion rather than fact, and everybody with knee-jerk reactions, and of course this cancel culture. And if you remember, everybody's now, so a lot of people are rebelling against the cancel culture. This oversensitive kind of nebulous jury on what is right and what is wrong in society. And I talked about this many years ago, at least one or two years ago already now, and the dangers of it and how I was not on board, and now it seems like a lot of other people are beginning to realize just how dangerous this cancel culture idea can be. We're seeing a lot of people that that were, especially during the early days of the Me Too movement, who were canceled without any kind of real investigation, just completely believing the stories of somebody that said something about somebody without a real investigation, without a kind of any kind of real facts, that was judge and jury and decision made by the public. And we've seen lives and careers ruined by that. I'm not justifying some of the people's possible behaviors, but I think we've seen, and once again, I don't know how far this is going, but I just saw recently that Kevin Spacey, who was one of the first or early people that were canceled due to accusations about him supposedly assaulting or even molesting some young actors about 15, 20 years ago. And he was, you know, he lost his job on House of Cards. He was taken out of some films. He hasn't been in a major film since then. But I've just seen over the last couple of years, he's fought these charges and he has won. So was he unfairly judged 2 years ago? Because now when there's real facts and other people have to testify, not just the accuser, not just he said versus she said or he said versus he said, but witnesses and facts, when a real investigation or when a real trial is held, here's a guy like Kevin Spacey, well-respected, one of Hollywood's most popular and most successful two-time Oscar-winning actors. And within minutes, his career was completely derailed. And he was vilified and canceled, if you will. And now, 2 or 3 years later, even more than that, 4 or 5 years later, really, as all of these accusations are being fully investigated and brought to trial, he's winning the cases. So now what? But it doesn't matter. The accusation so often sticks much longer than the retraction or even the refuting of those by facts or by jury or by investigation. Those accusations, sadly, the accusation, which is usually salacious and headline making, sticks with people more than what we find out, which takes a little longer, takes a little more elbow grease, takes a little time. Because we are knee-jerk society, and we have no attention span. We want beginnings to end to happen very quickly. We don't want to wait in our consciousness, in the cultural consciousness. So we all make our minds up without the full story, depending on if we like or dislike somebody, especially. That plays a key role in it. And we make knee-jerk reactions all the time. All the time. And that's not good, especially if you're on the receiving end of something like this. Because in today's world, anybody can make an accusation about anyone, famous or not. Some of your friends could go on Facebook and say something completely ridiculous about you, whether you are a celebrity or not, whether you have any kind of public reputation or not. And that could still hurt you in getting a job or with your friends in your own circle. So we're all susceptible to this. And maybe we don't want to think about it all the time, but that threat is out there because of this access that social media and the internet has given us. So yes, it has democratized, if you will, and given people access to information and the airing of their views. Yes, a good thing on paper. But I think there's a lot of downsides to it as well. The journalism profession as a whole has suffered, not only as a business, but as an entity. As I said before, it's hard today to trust what you read anywhere. You know, it really is. And so much of what is cluttering our world of information, thanks to social media, is really frivolous, ridiculous things, mostly about celebrities, because we are a celebrity-driven society and have been for decades. And once again, the internet has only, and social media has only, you know, expounded on that and elevated that noise. I mean, now celebrity, first of all, it doesn't take much to become a celebrity anymore. Half the celebrities I see about celebrities, and I'm doing air quotes again here, folks, in these stories, you know, on the news, on these news sites, I don't even know who they are. The term celebrity is being handed out to, you know, to just about anybody. Some viral star, influencer, you know, bad reality television person. I don't know how three quarters of these people are. And I don't know why they've gotten any notoriety at all. And when I see them then in real life and read about them, I realize they don't deserve it. So that's the sad part, is that notoriety or celebrity has been, you know, or fame, if you will, whatever you want to call it, has been diluted too. And that's basically what you see in most of these kind of portals that just offer you what's trending or what's the big news. And one of the big stories over the last couple of weeks, which is ridiculous that it's even a story, or that is, you know what's ridiculous? That I'm even going to talk about it. But that's the world we live in. And so when there is a ridiculous or frivolous story like this, which it is, I admittedly it is. But what I do try to do then, once I've been you know, bait and clicked, I guess. Once I've been fished, once the hook is in my mouth and I've been reeled in, at least what I try to do is, okay, well, is there something we can take away from this? Or is there a bigger cultural lesson to be learned here? Let's get something out of this ridiculous story that I really shouldn't care about, I really shouldn't be thinking about, I really shouldn't know about, and I really shouldn't be talking about or thinking about. And yet, here I am. Now, in my defense, I will say that when the story first popped up, I did not pay any attention to it. And I viewed it and saw it for what it ultimately turned out to be, which was a frivolous story about a celebrity that, if not for the world of social media, if not for the world of Twitter or Facebook or Instagram or anything else, this story would never have seen or heard the light of day. If there was the way things were 30 or 40 years ago, when there was X amount, you know, a finite number of credible outlets that were news, that with editors who were vetting stories, reporters who were researching stories and getting getting facts before they were disseminated to the public, and editors sitting there saying, "Is this newsworthy?" That is that's one question that has been completely eliminated from the public square. Everything about anything is just thrown out there. And those who throw that out there just see what sticks. And as I said before, a lot of times how it sticks or why it sticks is not based on the story itself, but how the story itself, the gossip itself, the opinion itself, how it is framed, how it is manipulated, the headline that's there, the insinuations there, and how they are stamped out in the story or put forward in the story can contribute to the believability or the validity of the story for at least being out there. But this is a story that in a different world would never have ever have made a newspaper at all. And at best, it may have made a one line in a gossip column in a magazine or a newspaper, but it certainly wouldn't have become the story that it became. And as I said, when I first saw this story, when it first began to break, I didn't click on it. I did not fall prey to the bait and click of, well, what's this about? Because the headline itself did not suck me in. It sort of made me shrug and groan and say, who cares, and move on. And I did, until this story seemed to get legs and kept popping up day after day with new news, if you will, or at least new allegations or new statements from each side, to the point where, you know, being a pop culture, you know, aficionado, whatever you want to call it, my interest was piqued. Now they did get me, because this story just was not just a one timer that as it should have been there and gone, because it was so nothing. But because both sides continued to give it legs, as well as because the public were the real culprits here, who gave this story legs by commenting on it, and thus somewhat, you know, forcing both sides of this story to make a statement. And then, of course, then you comment on the statement that's made. And then the story lives on again for another day and another day. And everybody's looking at what the public is saying. And then bosses, if it's, you know, then higher ups are worried about reputations, whether it's the celebrity's handlers or their employers. And then everybody's involved. And suddenly it becomes a story that does now demand attention when, by all rights, it should not. So you're saying, wow, Jim, what is this story? Was this about Putin and the Ukraine? Is this about inflation? Is this about immigration? Was this something about the president? Is this about January 6th? Is this about subpoenas? I mean, wow. The way I'm describing this now, right, this has to be a major story. Wow. I mean, for this story to have taken on the way you're describing it, these new lengths and all these different opinions and different comments from somebody. My gosh, this must be, is there something about, the U.S. and China relations? Is it something about the new British prime minister? Wow. I mean, what must this be? Don't keep us in the dark on this anymore, Jim. This has to be a big story. It may have started like nothing, just like the Watergate story did, right? That was buried on page 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 when it was first reported on by Woodward and Bernstein. Oh, yeah, the Democratic organization office was broken into last night. Okay, whatever. It was buried in the newspaper. A year and a half later, it took down the president, first president ever resign. But it started as, we might as well cover it. It's something about the Democratic Party, right? So it, we'll give it, a couple of inches here in the back of the newspaper, and that's the way this story started. But Jim, what international implications? What is this story that you're talking about that grew and that started as something frivolous and grew into something so important that it caught your eye and you've been following it now, and it became, this story that people involved in it had to continue to make several comments on and keep responding to the public as the public was raging and making their minds up on who they believed. Oh my God, Jim, what is the story? Is it Putin versus Biden? What is it? Is it Trump versus Pelosi? My God, what is it, Jim? It's James Corden versus the Balthazar restaurant in New York. Yeah, I know. BFD, right? Who cares? Why should I care? And yet, here I am, caring. Have you heard? Do you know the background on this story? I mean, James Corden, a late night talk show host, best known. I don't know if majority, I would say that name might not even, spring a memory to many people. You may have heard the name, but I don't know how many people even really know who James Corden is. In this world today of so many mindless talk shows that are hosted by people, there was a time when there were once again two or three talk shows and you knew who was the host of the late night talk shows. Now there's so many and very few of them make any kind of impact. Most of them make their only impact out of certain skits that may go viral, and they have an hour show, and basically that whole hour show is to get a 2 minute viral. They've got 60 minutes in which their main job at night, especially the late night shows, they've got 60 minutes and their main job really is out of those 60. And let's say with commercials, maybe they've got 42 minutes of real content, maybe even less than that. But let's say 45 minutes out of an hour. They've got 45 minutes of solid content. But their only bar, what they are judged on, are not even ratings anymore. Like how many people are watching the show when it's on, because hardly people watch television anymore. Everybody's just, time's shifting. And so the goal for most late night talk shows now, out of that, say, 45 minutes, and it's probably even less, of real content, aside of the commercials on broadcast or even cable now, if you've got an hour show, out of those 45 minutes that you are being paid to provide content, if you, out of that 45, can just find 2 minutes, maybe three, but it doesn't have to even be three, two, because once again, we have a very short attention span in this country and in this world now. If out of that 45 minutes, if you can come up with 2 minutes that have some interest, that are compelling enough as an isolated 2 minutes that can be put online and become viral, that people will watch. They may not watch your whole show. They don't tune into you at all. But if you have done anything worth anything for just 2 minutes out of the 45 that you have of real content, if you can just find 2 minutes of something that's interesting or entertaining or provocative or funny or whatever it is, just 2 minutes, during that from that 45 minutes, you are a success. You will make tens of millions of dollars. That's no joke. Because for the most part, nobody in any kind of real numbers, regardless of who's the king of late night, there is no kings or queens of late night. Forget about it. Those shows are not what they used to be, both in attention that they get or quality. They are pandering. Many of them have taken some definitive political views, which is really not their job. And so they've turned off half their audience anyway, one way or the other. But whether it's Stephen Colbert or Jimmy Fallon or Jimmy Kimmel or Trevor Noah or Seth Meyers or James Corden or any of these people who have late night shows, any of them, the numbers that they attract now are so minuscule based on what they used to be in the days of Johnny Carson, The Tonight Show, when that was a show that you did watch. Now, once again, there were less options, so that certainly accounted for the bigger audiences, but at the same time, the content is just not there anymore, and the interest is not there anymore. But they have become staples of television, and so every network feels as if they need a late-night talk show, but they really don't. They really don't. And I'm not even sure why they still, I mean, I guess they get some revenue from them, but certainly, you know, Stephen Colbert or Jimmy Fallon or Jimmy Kimmel and the three big networks, you know, if you, their combined audiences don't add up to what Johnny Carson used to have by himself. Not even close. And certainly not in importance or interest. But what they do, because they are, this is their job. What they do on a regular basis, sometimes nightly, sometimes not. But what they do is come up with 2-minute sketches or skits or moments that they do isolate and put out on the internet every day and hope that somebody clicks on and watches it. And that's how they're judged. That's what their aim is. So James Corden, whether you know it or not, is on after Stephen Colbert, 11:30 in the Central Time Zone, 12:30 at night. You know, it's late for people going to work the next day. So if you are a James Corden fan, you most likely don't watch the show live until 1:30. You probably DVR it. But James Corden is best known for his car karaoke bit. That is that bit where, now they've obviously run it to death. But when it started, it was a cool bit. It was an interesting, clever, worthy bit where James Corden would sit in a car with a celebrity and they would turn the radio on and either sing one of a celebrity's own songs, or he'd be sitting in a car with a celebrity and they would sing a song together like you do in a car. It was a clever, well thought out, well executed bit. No question about that. I give him or whoever thought of that bit kudos. Great idea, especially for today's world, especially for something to go viral. 2 or 3 minutes, you get the idea of what it is, and it's just funny to see these, you know, the two people sing in the car just like everyone else, so it's relatable. And then, of course, it got to be a cool thing. And then the level of celebrity grew, and you had Paul McCartney and Elton John and everyone else, you know, in a car with James Corden singing their songs or singing other people's songs, and Robert De Niro or other actors. So it was a great bit, no question about it. And it did exactly what it was meant to do. It became the one thing every night from the James Corden show that the next day people either went on the website to see who was on Carpool Karaoke, or it was thrown out there. James Corden in the car with Paul McCartney. And that was the way that show was judged. And that's the only reason he has a job today, because he does not get any ratings at all. And he's really not a good interviewer at all. He's a performer. He was a Broadway performer. I mean, that's what he is. He's not a talk show host. He's not an interviewer, if you ever watched the show. He fawns just like everyone else does now. They all just fawn on their guests. There's no real questions being asked. There's nobody really. It's just promoting shows. What's their next show that they're promoting or whatever their project is. And the host just fawns over them. There's no real. All the guests are media trained, and they're talking about one thing. There's very little spontaneity. So the interviews, doesn't matter who the guest is. You're not going to hear anything interesting. But those shows are built around those 2 minutes. So if Jimmy Kimmel is is doing some bit, or Jimmy Fallon is playing some game with a celebrity that's funny, that's what they'll put out, that 2 minutes, and that's enough to drive the whole show. What a great gig that is. You get paid tens of millions of dollars to basically produce at least 2 minutes of something. Hopefully that will be interesting enough for people to click the next day. Wow, not a bad gig at all. So there's James Corden. He's on the Late Late Show, I guess. Is that the name of it? I don't even know. I can count on one hand how many times I've actually watched the show. He's a funny enough guy, but he's not a comedian. You know, he hosted the... I don't know why he was chosen. Maybe he produced it or something, but he... If you remember, there was this Friends reunion special that was on one of the streaming services, and he was the host of it. It was terrible. It was awful. He's not an interviewer. He was just fawning over them. It was terrible. But he is funny. He's got a lot of energy, and he's a good performer, and that's why this Carpool Karaoke bit is right up his alley. Notice it's not about him interviewing somebody. He's a host of a talk show. What is the most popular part of his show is not his interviews. It's something has nothing to do at all with his interviewing. It's about him performing with another performer, because that's what he does. He's an actor. He's a performer. That's his strength. And so that is not surprisingly that's Carpool Karaoke is the one thing from his show that it's known. As I said before, it's a great bit. They've run it into the ground now, but that's the thing that kept that show alive, because the ratings are ridiculous, very low. But anyway, James Corden, he's on every night. He's hosted different award shows and things like that. So he's certainly a prominent personality to some extent, even though his show is on very late. This carpool karaoke is what put him into the pop culture zeitgeist. And he's actually quitting next year already. I mean, he's probably made enough money where he's lucky guy, no question. He won the lottery. He got this job of hosting this late late show. Once again, he wasn't even on anybody's radar screen. He didn't audition for it. He was in a play in New York on Broadway, and at the time, the head of CBS, Les Moonves, saw him in this play and said, wow, I think he might be good to host this Late Late show that we're going to put on. Never hosted a talk show in his life. Just doing his job that night, and somebody saw him and thought maybe he would be good. Wow, he's really interesting. He's funny. He's got a good personality. That's what I'm looking for. Wasn't really, can he interview anybody for a talk show? That's not what's important anymore. As I said before, it's just find any 2 minutes, whether it is one of your interviews, whether it's a bit you come up with, whatever it is, just give me 2 minutes a show out of the 45 minutes that you have to do something that I can put out the next day that will get clicks and views. That's all those late night talk show hosts are hired for, and that's all they're expected to do. It's unbelievable. But regardless, James Corden is a very wealthy man. He's got his own show for several years. He's got a good fan base. He's obviously got a good reputation. At least he did. Because he's been a spokesperson for different commercials and stuff. So, yeah. Very successful career. And talented guy for what he's trained to do, which is an actor in the theater. But he's not really a good television host, and he's not really a big television star. He's not really a good movie star. He belongs on the stage. So it'll be interesting to see if he goes back to Broadway and just stays and goes back to his strength. Because he can now. Because he's got to have at least $30 or $40 or $50 million in the bank. And so that's why he's quitting. The show's never made any impact besides this carpool karaoke. But I would say that now, over the last week or so, James Corden has made more headlines in the last week. And there's been more interest about James Corden in the last week than there has ever been in his entire career. And certainly do the run of his show. Including the popularity of the carpool karaoke. So here is this story that was just a small little blip about James Corden being rude to his server at a restaurant in New York. And so if I remember the initial headline, it had something to say about, James Corden is banned. See, once again, I'm telling you about the way headlines are written. To entice you, to pique your curiosity. It doesn't just say, oh, James Corden, has a run-in at a restaurant. Boring. No. You got to choose the right words, the right buzzwords. James Corden banned from famous New York eatery for rude behavior. Now, I'm paraphrasing, but that's basically the gist of that way, the way that story was initially posted on online news sources. And if you notice, there's words there that will pique people's interest. Banned, famous New York restaurant, abusive behavior. Wow, we got banned and famous restaurant, New York, Big Apple, right? Oh, yeah. Abusive behavior, banned, James Corden. So that's the way you write a headline. And when I saw that paraphrased headline initially about 2 weeks ago now or so, I didn't even bother. I'm like, who cares? Don't really care about James Corden. And you get to a point where you can read through these things. Unless he punched the person in the face, which I didn't know if he did or not, but I doubted that he did. So I didn't pay attention to this story about James Corden getting banned from this restaurant called Balthazar, which apparently is a trendy, popular restaurant in New York. So James Corden was banned for basically insulting the management, and most specifically, and to the greater degree, his server at the restaurant, the waiter or waitress. And I believe it was a woman, but that we don't say waiter or waitress anymore right now. We say his server. So once again, I didn't even waste my time. Who cares? Don't really care about James Corden. It sounds very gossipy to me, as much as they tried to entice me with all their buzzwords, and I didn't pay any attention to it. Went on just, you know, scrolling down and reading other news stories. Well, then, the next day, there's James Corden's picture again with another headline. You know, James Corden denies abuse allegations at Balthazar. Well, now we see what's now, you know, now we got a little more specific. Now the name of the restaurant is there. And now James Corden is denying these allegations. So what may have sounded like some little gossipy thing that somebody may have witnessed now seems to have a little traction. And I still didn't bite yet. I thought it was interesting how what seemed to be a very frivolous, light as gossamer story the first day about James Corden being in a restaurant and potentially insulting a server elicited now some statement from him, thus giving it legs, keeping that story alive another day with another interesting or salacious headline, another bait and click headline. And then on the third day, it says, owner of Balthazar's lifts ban. And so now, lifts the ban from James Corden. So now I'm like, what the heck? So now I'm interested because this seems to have, you know, now I'm like, okay, this is 3 days in a row. And this story has gone from, you know, allegations and a ban to a denial to now the initial allegation has been lifted. The ban has been lifted. So what happened here? So now I was interested. What the heck was this? Because it seemed to be over. But it did seem to have more life than it deserved or ever should have had. And also, you know, so being a pop culture, interested in pop culture, my interest was piqued because this thing had taken such an interesting little turn where it should have just gone away after the first day. Never should have seen the story again. But 3 days later, and not only is the story still alive, but it's completely changed. It's resolved itself. There was some controversy going on here that was not on my radar screen, which I thought, well, now let me see what this is about. And so finally clicking on and reading the newest news and then getting the background of the story, you know, then of course I find out that, you know, this restaurateur who owns Balthazar is kind of known for, he went on, the way this whole thing started, he went on Twitter and made this proclamation based on James Corden being in the restaurant that he was banning James Corden. He's never banned anybody, but he was so abusive to the management at the restaurant, especially to his server. One night calling her names and saying that she can't do her job and she's useless and he can do her job better. And I've never had anybody be so abusive to my servers and he was praising a server. You know, she was very shaken but she muscled through and finished her shift, even though she was shaken and upset by these comments that James Corden said, and I will not have my staff abused. I don't care who it is, and so I am banning James Corden. So that was all there that first day. Woo-wee. Wow. So, of course, with all that rhetoric flying on Twitter from the owner, people weighed in. Just hearing one side, just hearing what this owner said, that he was banning him and he purportedly or allegedly did X amount of this, sending the food back and demanding that they get another one and demanding getting free drinks because they were so ill served, and they ruined their order, and he demanded free drinks for the rest of the night and this whole thing. And so for this behavior, the owner of Balthazar was banning James Corden. So now that was the whole story, at least according to the owner of the restaurant. So in today's world, especially because every celebrity has a group of media, well, I shouldn't say, they have social media person that handles all their Twitter accounts and their Instagram accounts. I got news for you, people. If you follow somebody, a celebrity, most of them do not post those pictures or do not write the captions. Someone does that for them on a daily basis. And everybody is now, you know, everybody has a brand, right? We all have a brand out on social media, especially if you're a celebrity like this, a national celebrity, international celebrity like James Corden. So I'm sure that, and having worked in the public relations world, even though not in the last several years, but having worked in it, I used to deal with people in crisis, companies, and even some high-profile people, if they got into a jam, whether it was legitimate or not. You know, the news was out there, and how do we control this? How do we contain it? How do we put a good spin on it, right? That's the job. So I'm sure that once these stories came out, you know, James Corden, for the most part, has a pretty squeaky clean, nice reputation. He's just this nice British guy that, you know, does the carpool karaoke and sings, and he's, you know, he's just, there's never been a lot of, you know, whether you like him or not, he seemed like a nice enough guy. He didn't have a, he never said anything, you know, very controversial. He was, you know, he's just there. You know, he had a good reputation. At least he didn't have a bad reputation. I mean, he had a good reputation. He didn't have a bad reputation. He was just, you know, smiley, you know, British guy who, you know, you may have seen sometimes on this show singing with Mariah Carey in a car, right? That was pretty much James Corden. Well, now, you know, here's this guy who had who's always positive, at least it seemed, and always, you know, optimistic and laughing, and now you're seeing this dark side of James Corden. Wow. I mean, here's this guy that you never heard a bad word about him, and now he was abusive. So that was another thing that kind of piqued people's interest. And in today's world, there's such a sensitivity to anything negative. So you know that his handlers, either whether it was a PR people or social media people, are like, whoa, you better, you know, this is, you know, you've got this good reputation. You're a spokesperson for many different products. We need to right this ship. You need to, you know, respond. So apparently, even though this was, like I said, I wasn't involved in this story for several days, but apparently, you know, he called the owner of the restaurant and apologized to the restaurant. I don't know if you apologize to him or whatever, but they worked it out, and the next day this guy lifted the ban, or the next couple 3 days lifted the ban. So it was like, okay, it's done. Maybe it wasn't as bad. Maybe the, you know, for all you know, the server may have exaggerated things, and the owner of the restaurant was trying to protect his employee, which is a good thing to do. And so, you know, maybe it was all just overblown. And maybe the restaurant owner, in his zealousness to support his server, you know, may have gone, you know, by banning him, may have gone an extra two steps on this. But now it sounds like cooler heads prevailed after the event, and the ban is lifted. Oh, the big ban. So now James Corden can go have an omelet again at Balthazar. Big deal. But then James Corden comes out, and he's asked about it a couple of days later, and he basically gives kind of a cocky answer, saying, you know, this was so silly, which is true. But he says, I didn't do anything wrong. This was overblown, and I didn't do anything. And it's silly. And, you know, so he's not really admitting to anything. I don't know what he said to the owner, you know, off the record or behind closed doors, but publicly he basically was kind of not admitting that he made a mistake or blew up or made these abusive comments. Basically said, I did nothing wrong, and this whole thing is silly. Silly, he's correct on. But I didn't do anything wrong is kind of saying that this guy created this whole idea. So now, of course, the owner has to come back and refute that. And he's like, no, here's what happened, and he's detailing it now, giving the story more legs. And now he's got eyewitnesses and exactly what he said. Apparently, his wife has some allergies, and there was some egg white in an omelet. And his wife couldn't eat that. They sent it back. When they brought it back the correct way, it had the wrong side dish. I don't know if she wanted, sausage, and they brought her bacon. I don't know. But so then the order was wrong again, and this is when he exploded and told the woman that, she can't do her job, and I should go back and make this omelet because I could do it better than you, and all this ensued. Well, apparently he did do this. He did blow up, and he did say this. Because now there were eyewitnesses. Once again, now this story, by him denying it, now the other guy has to show that, hey, I wasn't making this up. So now he's got to add more fire, and now he gets witnesses and other people in the restaurant. Okay, so now it looks like James Corden really did have this confrontation, really did say those things. Whether this is silly and whether it's newsworthy, now that reality, that truth is gone. You've made it newsworthy. Either by denying it, something that was true, or passing it off, and now, because of course now you made the owner of the restaurant look bad. So you didn't really help things publicly. You may have mended fences privately, but publicly you only added more gas to the fire, which now prompted the owner to come back and now refute James Corden again. To the point that a week later, James Corden now, forget about, quotes in interviews or in newspapers or in statements, printed statements to the press. Now James Corden on his show addressed this issue. I mean, here you are on a network show and you are now talking about an omelet at a restaurant that you sent back. That's how silly our society has gotten today. And so James Corden then did do a mea culpa and did say, yes, I was ungracious and I shouldn't have done this. And so he copped to it and he apologized, because I'm sure his PR people said, you know what, you're right, this is silly, but it is so out of control and you're not looking good here. And now they've got eyewitnesses, so it's not just he said, she said, or he said, he said. Now we've got some other outside people that are corroborating what he said. The owner. They're backing up his version. And sure enough, James Corden admits that what he did and what he said is exactly what the guy said. Now, what his intent was, and he did say, I probably overreacted and I shouldn't have said this, so he did apologize on his network show for sending back his wife's omelet. But then, of course, the public, which gave this story legs as well, had to chime in, and they said, well, I don't, that apology was fake. It was scripted. It didn't feel sincere. That wasn't a good sorry. So now we're even rating the amount of sincerities behind the sorry, behind the apology. Because once again, we have to chime in as a society, and we have to comment on every piece of minutia. Who cares? So now, apparently, that television, that network apology was enough for the owner of Balthazar to lift the ban. And so James Corden and his wife can now go to Balthazar in New York and have this omelet that they love so much. So what happened here at the end of the day here? First of all, a stupid story that had no right even being reported became a story that had legs for more than a week and actually forced James Corden to use his network show to right the ship on. He had to make a very high profile apology for really a story that was nothing to begin with. But social media created it, as well as Corden making things worse by not admitting to it. And for all you know, You know who comes out looking like a rose is the owner of this place, because I never heard of Balthazar's before in New York, and now I know it. So that band and tying this thing to Corden did that restaurant a lot of great PR. Balthazar in New York, never heard of it, never been there. I know about it now. People will go there. Couldn't buy the publicity, couldn't afford the publicity that they got for a week. Ultimately, not only just online with your clicks and your views, Balthazar, 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 people talking about Balthazar, but to get on, to be mentioned on a network show, you know how much of, you know how much a 30-second commercial, even for a late talk show, costs? Balthazar never had a commercial on the on that show because it would cost a couple of $100,000. So James Corden, who denied doing wrong, but did act in an abusive way, made the mistake of first even acknowledging it. But then when he acknowledged it, he lied about it or played it down or dismissed it, which then angered the other side. And then the other guy got his witnesses. So here's the difficult, here's the lesson to be learned from this, is that in a PR world, and as I said, I worked in public relations for 10 years, and I used to help on crisis situations. You always wanted, the phrase was, you always want to get ahead of the story. When the accusation comes out, you want to make sure that you come out as quickly as you can with your side, whether it's admission or whether it's denial. But you want to make sure that your side is out there so that the accusation, as I said before, doesn't stick as truth. Many times the accusation will always stick, even if you are proven correct and your denial was correct. People forget the denial, they forget the truth, and they remember the accusation. But at least you're on the record of saying that this wasn't true, and it turned out not to be true. So you always want to get ahead of the story, and you want to make sure that your side is out there. But in today's world, a lot of the public relations rules have been rewritten, because a story like this could have gone away. James Corden, at the end of the day, if he got bad publicity, he deserves it. Because first of all, in my view, he probably shouldn't have even acknowledged it. Because in today's world, there, as I said before at the beginning of the podcast, all people, there's some people that all their jobs is to keep throwing stuff up on the wall to see what sticks. So this was a frivolous, stupid story to begin with, and it probably would have gone away. And he dealt with it behind the scenes, and when the ban was lifted, it was done with. But the fact that he made public statements afterward, kind of dismissing and saying it was silly and didn't do anything wrong and not admitting guilt, that's what gave it new life. So he probably initially did the right thing. He called the guy privately and apologized, and the guy lifted the ban, and that was it. The story would be dead. But then he went in after he had felt like he had mended the fence, and then tried to defend himself, and he got in hot water. In today's world, what we've seen is that stories today, while it's important to get ahead of the story, sometimes, depending on the severity and the real damage the story could do, you're better off not even acknowledging it. Because tomorrow, who's ever generating these stories are going to throw up stuff more, and your story will be forgotten because something else is going to come up. We don't have an attention span unless you give it legs, unless you make me pay attention to it. Nobody would have paid attention to that story if James Corden would have just let it die. But he couldn't, for whatever reason. He gave it legs, to the point where he had to, you know, apologize on his own show then. Some stupid little 5-minute little outburst, that he, 5-minute, maybe 40-second outburst in a restaurant, wound up being on national television, apologizing. So silly. But when I look at it from a public relations standpoint, from a pop culture standpoint, as I said, the lesson to be learned is in today's world, while the first counsel or suggestion would have been, well, get out and tell your story. Today, you almost don't have to. If you've seen, you remember a couple of years ago, there was a lot of controversy. Several public officials in high-ranking jobs were accused of wearing blackface. Do you remember that? A governor, or a governor, and even Justin Trudeau of Canada. They were shown with pictures from 20 years ago or 30 years ago wearing blackface at a party or something. And while you would think, especially, and that was right around the whole George Floyd thing, when race relations were in a tinderbox, and everybody was just so focused on race, that these things came up. So you think, well, these people's careers are destroyed. And there were three people. I think there was somebody like a district attorney in Virginia as well, and there was a governor of some state, and Justin Trudeau. I remember those three of them were making headlines all around the same time of being involved in some blackface kind of thing at a frat or at a party or whatever it was. At the end of the day, that should have derailed their careers. They should have had to all resign. But you know what? None of them lost their jobs, because yes, there was a lot of heat and it burned fast, but they denied them and they didn't make another statement. And then other stories filled in the vacuum, filled in the void, and those faded away. Whether they were true or not, whether they were salacious or not, we have a short attention span, and in the news world, something the next day, something big is going to happen, is going to push that aside. And sadly, rather than getting the truth out in today's world, depending on the severity of it, if you can weather that storm, if you're a public figure or even a private figure, if you can weather the storm of the initial outburst against you, if you can personally weather that and publicly weather it, for a couple of days or even a week, if you can take all those hits, if your skin is thick enough and you can and you don't break down to the temptation of lashing out or denying it like James Corden did, and basically are downplaying it or actually sounding cocky about it like he did, which added to the tension and added fuel to the fire. If he would have just let it be, he would not have had to have apologized a week later and make this a big story, because it would have went away. Within a couple of days, the Prime Minister of England resigned. Okay, that's a bigger story than James Corden getting kicked out. But in the absence of a big story, you're giving your story that's nothing some new life to keep that, to fill the void until the big story comes along. But there's always going to be a big story coming along. So just hold tight. That is the general suggestion or information or counsel that I would offer in today's world, depending on the severity, of course. In James Corden's case, this was such a silly, stupid, he was correct to say it was a silly, incident. That does not even merit news. You're right. But don't say that, because by belittling it, you're giving it life. You're angering the people that made the accusations, because those people thought it was important to put it on Twitter. So now you're creating more controversy, more antagonism, more tension. He settled it behind closed doors. It was done. But then he had to get his side out and be dismissive and be maybe a little high horse celebrity. And he wound up paying for it. So two lessons. First of all, if you get into any kind of situation like this, depending on its severity, you might want to just keep your mouth shut completely and weather the storm, like Bruce Springsteen. We still don't know what happened to Bruce Springsteen. with his DWI. We still don't know the facts. He's never made a statement about that. Other things filled in the gap. We still don't know what happened that night. We have a lot of different stories, but we still don't know. He got away with it. He paid a fine. It was, you didn't even hear about that he paid a fine and it was found not guilty. You didn't hear about that. But he has never made a public statement about what happened that night, which lends me to believe that he was guilty about it. But you know what? He just kept his mouth shut. That could have been a very divisive, especially with his reputation. The fact that the story didn't come out 2 or 3 months till after it happened, there's obviously, it sounds allegedly like a cover-up may have been going on, but it doesn't matter. It went away because Bruce never really confronted it. He never made a public statement himself about it at all, about what happened that night. He talked about his overall impressions of getting arrested, but he never talked about the exact thing of what happened. He never gave a TikTok about, here's what happened. I was there that night. I did this and I did that. He never said that. And the story went away. And now he's got a tour next year and everybody's going to love Bruce Springsteen. But we still don't know anything about that DWI. And that's an important thing. But sadly, we went on to other things. This is even worse. This is so silly, this James Corden thing. This could have blown away in 2 seconds, but he gave it life. So in today's world, while 10 or 15 or 20 years ago, I would have said, let's get in front of this. Let's tell your side. Let's give this tech. Let's make sure that we do it. In today's world, because the media has changed, every situation is individual, and you have to look at each situation and its impact and what really happened. But we have seen that by not commenting, you can actually save yourself more than trying to get in front of the story. Because in today's social media world, there's a constant need for content. And there's another story, whether it's fake or not, whether it's made up or not, whether it's overblown or not, that's just waiting to be thrown up there again. And maybe that one will then overshadow yours. So James Corden, initially, given how frivolous this was about being banned from some stupid restaurant in New York, he should have kept his mouth shut. That's what I would have told him to do. But if he demanded on getting, commenting on it, then if you're going to do that, then do what I said before. Make sure you tell the truth. And if you are going to apologize, make sure that the apology sounds legitimate and apologize at the outset. It took him a week to apologize. That was his problem. He could have, if he denied it, which was wrong because that was false, he did do it. So he should have come out. If he wanted to make a statement, he should have done that apology 4 or 5 or 6 days earlier when he made his first comments. Instead of belittling it and dismissing it, he should have said, you know what? I had a bad night. I did lose my temper. I shouldn't have. I apologize to the server. I apologize to the staff. I apologize to the owner. I apologize to my fellow patrons in the restaurant for making an outburst. Here's why I did it. My wife has an allergy. It was a little frustrating, but it shouldn't have been something that I lost my temper on, and I apologize. And I'm glad that they've lifted the ban, and I can't wait to go back there, and I will certainly show the respect that the difficult job that servers have, I will show them respect, and you're done. Thank you very much. There you go, James. There it is. That's what you should have said. That's free. That's on me. Thank you. But the people that either were handling you didn't have that advice for you, or you just went off script and decided to belittle it yourself. But that's what you should have done. Either let it die and let something else, because it's frivolous anyway, it's not life or death, let it just go away. Have some thick skin and let it go away. But if you are going to do it, be sincere in your apology. Admit what you did wrong and say how you're going to do better in the future. He waited a week to do that and gave the story legs. The other lesson to learn is, for all of us, cool your jets. What is going on with us today? Oh, everybody's blaming COVID and all this, but there is such, people just have this attitude today. We see all these stories about these Karens, these women, or these Kevins, but Karens are usually these women that are caught on video that are screaming at people and making all this ruckus and everything about insignificant little things. There, I don't know why everyone, all of us today are on edge, and we all feel entitled, and we explode on the smallest things. Take a breath, take a step back, and realize, is this really worth making a big deal about? Yes, we've all been in restaurants where the service has been bad. But do you need to be abusive to the server? The server didn't make the food, first of all. The chef did. So I feel sorry that one of the hardest jobs is being a server in a restaurant. Because people have this high expectation now. I don't know why. And there's this arrogance for a lot of people. Whether they're at a diner or they're at a $500 a plate place. But everybody seems to just be ready to take off. I feel sorry for servers in restaurants. And that's one reason why restaurants are having a problem finding people to work in them after COVID, because it's not the job, it's the people that they have to serve. The people have become, the job is the same, but the people have changed. There's some weird entitlement, some weird attitude that the average person seems to have these days. So do yourself a favor so you don't get yourself in trouble, you don't create a scene, and you don't get your blood pressure up, and you don't abuse the server. We've all had bad service at a restaurant. We've all gotten the wrong thing, or something hasn't been, you know, you wanted it rare and it was medium, whatever. You know what? Just deal with it. Stop making a scene. You're not that important. You make mistakes. Is it edible? Could you not eat it? Yes, oh, they forgot my thing. As long, you know what? This happened in a restaurant before. They never brought the thing. As long as they didn't charge me for it, whatever. I'm not going to abuse the server and saying, you know, I asked for a side of spinach and never brought it. You know what? Big deal. You didn't bring me my bread. How come we didn't get bread? The table over there got bread. Whatever. Just take a step back. Figure out or realize, is it important enough to make a scene and to be abusive to somebody and to get yourself and ruin your own dinner? Or just, you know what? As long as they don't charge you for it. I mean, if they charge you for it, then you certainly have a right to do that. But, or if it's wrong, they brought it back. You know what? If they brought it back at the same time, oh, the wrong side. That's fine. Whatever. That's what I do. Whatever. Okay. Oh, I wanted bacon and I got sausage. Whatever. Okay. Sorry. Don't worry about it. You might want to say, you know what, I did order the bacon, but this is fine. Don't worry about it. So, two lessons from the James Corden thing, from a public relations and a public kind of thing. You know, it's best to just let it die. Don't add fuel to the fire. But for all of us, in this situation, the next time you're in a restaurant and you don't get good service, maybe you don't leave as much of a tip, or maybe you do mention in a kind way. There's no need to be abusive. There's no need to show any attitude. Why ruin your night by getting yourself all upset? Then why give this other person who's working there a hard time too? They're doing their best. Some people are great waiters and waitresses and servers, and some people aren't. Now, I'll tell you one thing real quick before I go here. When I go to a restaurant, I don't know about you. This is, I think, you know, because in the millennial world here, we're all, you know, it's such a big deal to go to dinner. Everybody loves to go out, and eating at a restaurant has become such a big, major part of the lifestyle. That, you know, I'm sure these restaurants are now telling their servers to really, you know, you've got to become friends almost with the patrons. You ever watch these shows like Check Please? I love the service. Oh, you know, I don't really care. I'll tell you, I'm not trying to be rude, but my server, I do not go to a restaurant because of my server. I go to a restaurant for either the food or the company I'm with. I respect the server. I expect a certain amount of proficiency in serving me my food. But I don't need to know the server's name. I don't say, oh, I guess it's nice. Hi, I'm Tom. I'll be your server tonight. That's fine. But I don't say, well, I'm Jim and this is my wife or this is my friend. I don't introduce myself to the server. I'm not there for the server. I'm there for the company and the experience. The server is there. I'm polite to the server. I will joke with the server, but I'm not becoming friends with the server. Here's my favorite. Some people, oh, the service was so great. They were telling us all about the menu and what they. I'm not. I don't really. Everybody's taste is different. So this person, the server, says, "Oh, well, my favorite dish is this." Well, now you've put me in a spot because if I don't order that, it's almost like I'm disregarding your suggestion or I'm belittling your suggestion. And the fact is, I don't like cod or I don't like calamari. So that's your favorite appetizer, but I don't like it. So I don't get that. Now, am I insulting you by not getting it? Am I dismissing you by not paying attention to your... So I don't look for the input of the server. I mean, they give me the specials. Here's the specials. But when someone says, oh, that's my favorite on the menu, I know they may be told to say that, but I don't need that. I'm there for the food and for the company. The server, I am polite to. It's your job to bring the food and take my order and bring it to me and be helpful to me if I have a question. But I would rather that they ask the question, that they answer my question, but not offer me. I know that's what restaurants, because everybody is into this whole socialization thing, but I would rather, I think there's a server can be very helpful. You know, what if I ask your advice, well, what would you get? Or I'm thinking of this and this, what would you suggest? I've done that. And the server comes in, I'll say, okay, I'll, there you go. But I don't necessarily wait for the server to give me, oh, here's what I like, or here's this, or, you know, I just think that at the end of the day, the server is there to be a part of this, of the experience, but it's not the main thing. I shouldn't even, to be honest with you, the best server in my view is one that I don't even really pay attention to. That's the one that I will give the biggest tip to. That's how I roll. Because they are a necessary part of my meal, but they shouldn't be determining the success or failure of my dining experience. It's almost that they should do such a good job that they do what's expected. That's their job. They take the order. They make sure that it's delivered. They fill the water. If it's slow coming out, they come in and apologize. That's part of their job. But I don't need to become friends with the server. I'm there to enjoy my company or the food or the ambiance. The server there, to me, is a necessary part. But almost the better job they do is the more invisible they are. And that's not a cut. To me, that's what a server has done an excellent job when they have made this a pleasurable experience for me. They came and took my order. My order came on time my order was correct. Everything was there. Everything great. Perfect. I don't need constant attention. Constant, is everything okay? I'm fine. I came to spend time with the person I came with for the meal, to converse, to spend time with them. The server is a necessary part, but in my view, the less the server makes an impression on me, the better job they do and the better tip they're going to get. Because that means nothing wrong happened. They did their job. They came, they took my order, they gave me some water, they brought me what I was supposed to get. They checked up on me, they brought the food correctly, whatever, and we're done. Thank you very much. So that's the other part of it too. You know, if servers are being abused more, I'm wondering too if it's because they're being told by their employers to be more involved or active. So that now, you know, the patron is feeling oppressed. If I owned a restaurant, I would tell my servers to be involved but almost invisible. The more invisible you are, the better job you're doing. That's not a knock. To me, that's a high compliment. And then I will recognize that person when my meal is over. I will recognize they did a good job, and it will be reflected in the tip I leave. But if I keep getting somebody that's, I've had this. Oh, you didn't like that, huh? You know, commenting on what I've eaten or what I didn't eat. You know, that's, I'm not here to become buddies with you or to have some relationship with you. Now, to the other side of the coin, you know, if you go to a restaurant all the time, then maybe you do get a favorite server. But is that favorite server there because they're doing a good job for you? Now, some people, they love, hello, Tom. Oh, your name is Tom. I'm Sam. This is my wife, Judy. And we live in, you know, that's fine. But I'm not that way. I'm more that, you know, the server is there. They've got other tables to take care of. I'm not there to make a new friend. I'm there to enjoy the food, enjoy the company that I'm with. And I'm there to get the service that I expect, but as I said before, the least amount of involvement with me by the server, the better. That's how I view it. Just do what you're expected to do, or answer my questions. But I don't like, oh, well, this is my favorite. Oh. They always say excellent choice. Everybody who orders gets an excellent choice, so you know it's fake. So you know what? Don't even say it. I don't know. You might say, "Wow, Jim, you are." No, I'm not grumpy. I'm very polite to servers, and I always leave a generous tip. Even sometimes when I don't even get good service, I'll still leave a normal tip. When I go to a restaurant, I'm there to be with the person I'm with or the group I'm with and to enjoy the ambiance of the restaurant and the food of the restaurant. I don't need to become buddies and with the server. There's nothing wrong with that. But sometimes that becomes too much. And then when something does go wrong, I think people feel a little, because they've got a personal stake now with their server, that now they feel that they've got some right to lash out at them. So I would just say, you know what? Respect your server, respect them as a person, and respect the job they're doing. And as long as they give you attentive service, and they bring things, and they bring you things, and they answer your questions. That's all you need to do. Don't show attitude. Don't show superiority. You're not better than them because you're coming to that restaurant. That's kind of the attitude that's going on. Like, well, look, you know, I am at a restaurant, and you're just my server. I never look at people like that. I know the job they're doing. I never had to do that job. I never would. That's a tough job. So I give anybody who is a server at a restaurant a lot of credit, because that is not easy, especially in today's world. It's not an easy job to begin with, And if you're the patron, don't make their job harder. Don't make it more antagonistic. And if you're the owner too, you know, maybe, I don't know. Maybe I'm different, but I think the less the server is involved in my eating experience, the better. And that's not a knock. That's actually, in my view, you've done an excellent job. You've let me focus on what is important to me when I go to the restaurant, is the food and my company. So if you've done a good job in just providing that to me, I don't need all that extra crap. As long as you've brought me the right food that I wanted, and you've shown me attention, you've brought some water if I need it, you asked me anything else, but you let me be. You don't need to become a part of my meal. I don't need the server to be a part of my meal. Some people do. That's great. For if you like that. But I think that a lot of times that might lead to this. I'm not snobby. I'm not disregarding the server. I will joke with them. I will make a comment. I will ask questions. But I don't need them sitting next down. I don't need them sitting down next to me, talking to me and becoming my friend. I didn't come there to spend time with the server. I came there to spend time with my eating companion or companions and for the food I'm going to eat. So that's just me, maybe. But I think it might help in when you go to a restaurant and you wonder about, you know, the time you're going to have. If your expectations are too high from the service, you're going to get angry. And if they're below what you expect, you know, okay, some servers are better than others. Some people are better at their jobs than others. But it's not an easy job. It's a thankless job many times, and it doesn't pay much unless you give them tips. So I will even overlook a bad server. Now, if I go back to a restaurant a couple times and I continue to get bad service, I won't go to that restaurant anymore. But I still will never be abusive to the server. My statement is I don't go back. If I get good service, you know how I got good service? Not only did I leave a tip, but I came back. One night you go to a place, that's understandable that you might not have gotten good service. That's fine. You go back again a second time, and you get the same kind of bad service, then that's indicative of the restaurant. And that's the way I send a message. I don't go back. You lost my business. Let your actions speak louder than your words. Check, please. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNradio.com. Or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast, we are there. And don't forget to tell your friends, tell your family, tell anybody who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion is much appreciated. Hope you enjoyed episode number 336. I'm Jim Tirano. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, from the end of the web to your screen.